So hello, thanks for being here. My name is Sarah Clark from the University of Michigan. Kevin Dumkowski is sitting over here. We're happy to be together in this workshop because we're going to tell you about a pair of studies that we work on together. And we have a couple people here to thank. Both studies are funded by the CDC, so thanks to those folks. And we're really pleased to see so many people from the immunization program of the great state of Michigan here. We have some of the folks that are really the brains and the brawn behind the outstanding Michigan Care Improvement Registry, which Kevin and I will refer to throughout our presentation as MICR. A well-recognized, highly functional, just model statewide population-based immunization registry that is a tremendous resource for our state and is the backbone for the projects that we're going to talk about today. So those of you that are in the audience, thank you. We really appreciate the hard work that you do. That makes our work really quite easy. You probably know about the research that has shown immunization reminder recall to be effective in increasing childhood immunization rates. Reminder recall is used to identify kids who are eligible, that'd be the reminder part, or overdue, that's the recall, to identify those kids who need vaccine doses. And then reminder recall notifies either the immunization providers or the parents, or sometimes both, about the need for vaccination. In reality, it's not always easy to do. There are a lot of components of reminder recall that have to work right in order for it to be successful. Reminder recall requires a reliable system of identifying children's immunization status. So you need to know their history to understand what they may be due or overdue for. It requires personnel who know how to manipulate that system and pull that information out. And thirdly, it requires accurate contact information for notification targets. A little easier if it's on the provider side, much more difficult if we're trying to notify parents, and Kevin's going to talk a lot more about that in the second presentation. So the purpose of this whole study is to describe the extent to which private immunization providers, your basic primary care practices, are able to conduct practice-based immunization reminder recall. So not recall done by the health department or a health plan. This is within a practice recalling their own patients. Our study setting is the Detroit metropolitan area. We set out to recruit a sample of practices that provide childhood immunizations, and we really tried to get quite a variety. We were able to recruit practices that were in the very urban inner core of Detroit, as well as those that were a little bit further out in the suburbs. The practices were invited to participate in an intervention to increase the use of immunization recall using the MICR. And specifically, we asked them to conduct immunization recalls for 19 to 35-month-old children. And in order to do that, the study provided them with hands-on MICR training and ongoing technical support throughout the project. And we gave them the goal of conducting 4 recalls over a 1-year period. Okay? And what we really tried to do was set up almost a best case scenario. We would come in, help them assess what they had in their practice, give them very detailed hands-on training, and then support them with the goal of trying to conduct 4 recalls and see how they were able to do with that. The training occurred on site, which we thought was very essential to this project and is typically the way the MICR regional staff support practices, requiring practice staff to go to some third location just isn't going to work. They're busy folks with not a lot of time in their day, so we were able to have those trainings be at the practice site. The training consisted of an individual walking the practice staff through the processes for recall, as well as leaving them with a very detailed manual so that they would be able to have that backup support when they did the recall activities on their own. Hands-on assistance with the initial setup to recall, with building the roster, figuring out what kids are in the practice and tagging them in the roster for that practice, was part of the training. And the staff, the MICR regional staff members that conducted the trainings, spent more time in training and this hands-on assistant with the practices that needed more time with training. So there were a couple that were already fairly well versed with MICR, and they got a little briefer overview, and the ones that were much less facile with MICR got a more extensive training. Again, 30 minutes to a couple of days. 17 practices participated in this study. 15 were private offices, 2 were community health centers. 13 were, for the most part, or completely pediatric practices. 4 were a mix, more family, general medicine, but all did provide childhood immunizations. All 17 were using MICR at the time the study began. Most were interfacing through a high-speed internet connection. They were putting data in to the registry, and for the most part using the registry to do assessments on kids, maybe check the immunization record for a well child visit, but they were not using MICR to do regular reminder recalls. The recalls that 10 practices had done were mainly through health plans where, for example, the Blue Cross Blue Shield plan they worked with would send them a list of patients who were overdue, and then they would check the MICR to verify what shots those kids have been given. But it wasn't really a coordinated practice-based recall in any form or fashion. At the outset, we thought we'd give them a one-year period, and then we got generous partway through, and we thought, okay, we'll give them a few more months to reach that target of 4 reminder recall cycles. And as expected, we had variable results, and I'll walk you through this slide. Our 17 practices conducted a total of 56 recalls. 94% of them, or 16 of 17, conducted at least one recall. 82%, or 14 practices, conducted at least 2. 65% conducted at least 3. And 53% met our goal of conducting at least 4 recalls, 9 of the 17 practices. So we thought that actually was a pretty good outcome, and maybe even better than we would have expected at the beginning. Put it in another way, we did have one practice that did not conduct any recalls. 2 did only 1. 3 practices conducted only 2, and you can go on down from there. So of course, the key to the study is to try to figure out why is there such a variation in practices' ability to conduct practice-based reminder recall. And our Yogi Berra type answer is, if you've seen one practice, you've seen one practice. And so our practices ranged from a sleek-looking suburban medical center like this to something that's a little more folksy in the urban inner core of Detroit. And I don't mean this in any disparaging way, but more of a visual reminder to you that practices are all starting out from very different places. And in a lot of ways, the exterior of these buildings matches a lot of things on the interior of these buildings. So this practice has a fancy record-keeping system. It's well-organized, often electronic. Well-trained staff. It's a clean, well-coordinated, efficient facility. Records here were a little more haphazard. Maybe there was some water damage or they had some shot-out windows. You'll notice the bars on the windows back here. There was a quite a wide variety of practice characteristics when you just look at the physical facilities. And that gave us some clues into how successful they were able to be with the recall. So some of the challenges we encountered, and we want to use the word challenges because I think that connotates the idea that challenges can be overcome. They aren't quite as far as barriers, but these are the kinds of things that if you're going to promote practice-based recall, you're really going to need to go in expecting to have to work through these things. So the first challenge is addressing the perception that the burden of recall is greater than the staff availability. This hurt us with the one practice that was not able to conduct any recall. They got the training. The staff person felt overwhelmed, didn't think she could do it, wanted to, had really good intentions, but just couldn't get over that perception of, wow, this is going to be just too much for one person. And I actually think this same idea was a big part of the reasons that some other practices declined participation in the study altogether. So I think as you go out and try to promote practice-based recall, it will be really important to sell people on the fact that you are going to use some strategies to help them overcome the staff time required to do this so that they perceive that recall is feasible for them in their practice setting. A second very, very real challenge is practice disruptions. So if you remember from the earlier slide, we had two practices that conducted only one recall each. One closed, and you know in your own areas, practices dissolved or are bought up or closed all the time. The other one was moving locations and barely could keep up with basic operations and didn't feel like they could do anything extra. Another aspect of practice disruptions that's pretty common has to do with staff turnover. And you probably have had the experience where you just get somebody up to speed, they're well-trained, they got it going, they're efficient, and they get another job, and you're starting back from square one. And so sometimes those staff disruptions didn't cause a practice to completely shut down during reminder recall, but it really delayed the frequency with which they could do the tasks required. Anybody doing reminder recall will run into very quickly concerns about data accuracy. And what I would call sort of the classic concern is that, oh, the information in our practice record is correct, but in the registry system, the information is not updated or it's somehow wrong. And I think that is often a big perception going into a practice-based recall. I don't think it's a big perception coming out, because I think once people really look, and as registries grow, we happen to be fortunate to have a very mature registry that's really well populated in Michigan, and I think some of our practices were surprised at the accuracy of the data that was in there. But still, there very well may be instances where there are doses in the practice records, not in the registry. And that's something that, as you promote practice-based reminder recall, it's very necessary to explain the plan for dealing with those. And you know, one of the things incorporated in the MICR training involves running a recall, not sending those notices right out, but taking the time to check over the notices and even go back to the practice record and compare. For this kid, this doesn't look right. I think this kid is up to date, has been in the shots. Go back and compare with the practice record, and then have a plan for getting those doses entered into the registry or whatever information system is being drawn on for the reminder recall. So again, it's a challenge because it's a very real situation, but there can be an effective plan to deal with that challenge. A little bit different twist on the data accuracy issue, which I would call a high-tech accuracy problem, is that in our study, there were some practices that had found automated ways to input their information into the registry. And on occasion, there were problems with that automated transfer. And one example that we dealt with was one practice consistently had problems with when they gave Pediarix with it. For whatever, however they were doing it, those particular doses were not adequately populating the registry. So a little bit different twist, but again, one that required additional assistance from this technical staff to address this kind of technical issue that comes from the very good idea of automating and making things easier, but also sometimes automating requires a particular attention to make sure that those automated systems work accurately. A very sticky problem with data accuracy is what I would call a systemic data problem, and that's on the practice end, when the practice information isn't correct, where people are either recording things incorrectly or just not keeping it up. Sometimes it's a issue of the practice staff member, and our MICR trainers could help them remediate some of those recording errors. We had one situation where it was more of a provider level error, an ongoing thing. And that became very sensitive with a staff member feeling a little squeamish about telling the physician to do something differently. And that really caused a bit of an issue for that practice with recall notices being generated and the physician in the practice saying, no, that can't be right, this isn't working. Really caused a little conflict. So that's a little bit of a different angle on the data accuracy issue, one that with help from the technical support people can be addressed and overcome, but still one to watch out for. Exceptions, as you know, can be challenging. We had practices that used a slightly different immunization schedule than the standard ACIP recommended schedule. And so for the practice, that was frustrating because kids would be flagged as overdue when they were being vaccinated consistently with how the practice did things. And that is going to happen for practices that choose that. But certainly something that maybe we didn't appreciate at the beginning, and they found a way to flag those kids manually and take them out of their overdue list. Shortage situations obviously cause problems with reminder recall because kids will be flagged as overdue when they don't receive a dose that we can't give because we don't have any vaccine. So is it a horrible problem? It's frustrating, and it can be addressed manually, but it does add to the time and burden of reminder recall. Waivers also can be a problem when kids whose parents have refused vaccines get recalled and the practice has had that conversation, doesn't want to revisit that by sending a recall notice. So again, these are all situations where it just takes a little bit more staff time to deal with the manual removing of kids from the notification pile before they send those out. Our practices experienced a number of what we would call minor technical issues. A huge key to this was having someone by the phone who would answer sort of these on-call questions about, okay, it's given me this message, what do I do? Yes, sometimes people went back to the manual, but quite honestly, there's nothing like a live voice to help you out there. And so I think we found the ability of having one individual who had trained them, had developed a relationship, and was available for ongoing support throughout the project to be really, really valuable in helping practices overcome these. If they were on their own to look through a big manual that thick and try to find the answer, I think they would have given up in many of these instances. So I can't emphasize enough how valuable it was to have these really excellent resources providing this ongoing support throughout the project. And you know, once people solved those problems, they solved it and they knew it and they could do it right the next time. And so a thing to remember when promoting practice-based recall is the first time is the worst time, and you get better at it. It's like anything, and you get better at it, and you become more efficient, and you've sort of invested the time learning the systems and manipulating things, and it becomes much quicker in the subsequent recalls. And finally, we had several practices where there was a little bit of a disconnect between what I would call the recall worker bees, which sometimes were clerical administrative staff and sometimes were clinical, and the clinical providers. Sometimes there was maybe not sufficient appreciation of the time commitment involved in doing all the steps and in doing things very accurately. Sometimes there was just differential appreciation of the perceived benefit of doing recall, and the number of kids that would identify as being not up to date on immunizations. And in particular, when practice staff are trying to conduct their recall activities in their regular work day, there's opportunity cost there where the staff are doing recall activities and sometimes a provider might think they should be doing something else. So sometimes there can be just a little bit of conflict, might be too strong a word, but just a little sort of cognitive dissonance there that many of our practices sort of had to work out. And I think in a couple situations, the staff doing the reminder recall did not feel well supported in sort of people feeling that task was worthwhile. And we're going to see in a few minutes the practice's plans for doing recall in the future. And this was one of the things behind that. So our big keys to overcoming barriers have ongoing training, ongoing technical support, and ongoing moral support. I think that on-site training at the beginning was very important, but carried through so that the people feel like they have a connection to someone to call. And again, we're very lucky to have just excellent people who do this work. So their ideas about conducting reminder recall in the future, and we specifically asked them, would you continue to do this in a practice-based way? And 10 of our 17 thought that they would, and they included most but not all of our high-performing sites, the one that made the four or more recall goal, and a couple of late bloomers who were in the two or three recall category but really felt like they were getting it toward the end of the project and thought, hey, this is useful. Now I'm up to speed and I'm going to keep doing this. And we also asked, where do you think is the best place for reminder recall to be done? And almost all of these practices thought the best place was at the provider level because they were closest to the patients and the families. We had three practices that said right out, you know, we're done after the project ends, we're not going to do any more practice-based recall. I think it was a combination of the staff time and burden being high, but also this idea of maybe not well appreciated by some of their providers in the practice. And these folks thought that recalls should be done either by at the health plan level, things that they had experienced before where health plans identify the kids that are not up to date, or by health departments. Four practices just weren't sure. They didn't want to completely give up, but they were having a hard time fitting it in and seeing how, outside of a research study, how they would be able to continue that. And these four actually all said they thought the health plan was the best place to do recalls, and the practice would be sort of a second tier supplement to that to verify the information. So in summary, in this best case scenario situation, again, where we recruited practices, they made a commitment to us, we provided this hands-on, ongoing training, about half of the practices could achieve our goals for recall frequency. And as you take this back to your own work and think about promoting recall in the practice setting, you need to understand that recall challenges should be expected and may require substantial time to overcome. But I think with some careful planning and being direct with folks about here's what we're going to expect and here's how we're going to work on that, that those challenges don't have to be barriers to completely prevent practice-based recall. At the same time, there may be some practices that are just really not capable of sustaining practice-based recall. And so for those practices, we need to consider different levels of reminder recall beyond the practice level to include the health department or some other county level thing, and to incorporate health plans as we think about reminder recall and who might be responsible for that. So again, I want to acknowledge our MICR regional and state staff, our immunization division, and also the staff at the practices who, for the most part, really took this seriously and worked quite hard to at least work toward achieving the goals of this study. And thanks very much.